better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
Eric Musselman and Danielle Musselman had an interview with Moses Moody on Friday via Instagram. If you haven't gotten a chance to watch it, you can listen to the audio on hitthatline.com and our YouTube page. It's a very interesting conversation, and there was a lot of takeaways, a lot of points that I'm assuming a lot of you will be interested. And I know many of you were wondering prior to his signing day announcement that, hey, what's going on? People are getting a little worried.
Yeah, what's taking so long here?
Based on the Justice Hill conversation where Justice pointed out that he thought one of the players wasn't going to sign with this team. Well, that was answered in this conversation. Moses Moody touched on the contract, and here's what he said about why he waited a little bit to sign his national letter of intent.
I mean, that's what it is. It's the contract. So I just wanted to read over the document and see what I was signing. It's such a big step. It's a big move. So I just wanted to be 100% sure about certain things. That's why I had a couple questions and things I didn't understand, because, you know, it's a lot of terminology and everything I wasn't used to. So I had to clarify with the coaching staff, and we just got that out the way, and then I signed the paper.
So I've been told that he is a 4.0 student, and I thought that was an interesting part of the conversation that he had. And Eric Musselman actually enjoyed it, because a lot of these kids are just signing the dotted line, who cares, whatever, signing their life away, whatever the case may be. I know I looked over my contract when I started working at Pearson Broadcasting. I didn't just sign it, because that's what you're supposed to do when you sign your name to something. You want to know what you're signing your name to. So I really enjoyed his answer, Tommy, to why it took a little longer than most people thought it was going
to.
And
I was told his dad really wanted to go over it too and find a tale, which is what a father should do. And I think that's very wise on Moses' part, because someday he's going to be signing contracts that have a lot more bearing and a lot more money involved and financial, you know, repercussions for the first few years of his professional career. He needs to be that attentive to his business then. So I like the attention to detail. Of course, you wouldn't have liked it as much as if he had not signed. That's great. The national letter of intent, though, is really not negotiable, is it? The finer points of it, I guess. I've never signed a national letter of intent, but I don't imagine a lot of the language is non-standard from the NCAA. It's the same letter of intent. I guess there's some fill in the blanks as far as full cost of attendance and the amount of scholarship you're receiving, some of those type of things, but the language is the language. But good to see that he's paying attention, dotting I's, crossing T's, that kind of thing.
And in preparation for what's to come, because Moses Moody is going to play in the NBA someday, unless everyone that seems to talk about him is extremely long, which I wouldn't guess is the case, is you want to have certain experiences. You want to, whether it's signing your national letter of intent, whether it's playing basketball at an elite prep school, which he did, the number one prep school in the country. His team went 25-0. I think average margin of victory was 17 points or something. You want to have that preparation. And one of the good things, one of the benefits about Moses playing at Montverde is he got that in certain ways, playing on the number one team in the country, playing with elite athletes, playing with guys that are going to play Division I basketball all over the United States. Here was his conversation on why that's going to be important as he moves on to Arkansas.
What I imagine the next level being like, I can compare it to that, because I know just Coach Boyle, playing under Coach Boyle and his mindset, because he's done a lot of winning. He's coached a lot of SEC players, a lot of NCAA players, and just going through the scouting report, I know a lot of terminology that he used that's a little advanced for our age, and so just I know how to read a scouting report, how to go over a scouting report, because he's so thorough about every little detail. So it's a lot of stuff like that that I'm prepared with, and that's just off the court. Even on the court, I feel like we play at a faster pace. That's a lot more like the next level. And then playing on the winning team, playing on the team that we was on, it teaches you how to mature and be able to sacrifice. And I feel like everybody has a role. So just having the ability to play your role and sacrifice to win and win games. So I feel like that was a great thing that we all had to learn, had to grow up a little bit.
He played with some studs in high school, and he has an elite coach that's going to help translate to the college level.
This is why you go to a place like Monteverde Academy. I say that right, Montverde Academy. This is why you go to a prep school, essentially, to prepare for college. That he's getting his academics, but he's focusing really on basketball at a higher level. I don't know how it works, whether you get a scholarship or you pay a tuition to go to these kind of places, but this was advanced learning for basketball. This was like a Vanderbilt or a Stanford type deal for high school basketball. You put it on kind of in the same terms. So he'll be a more advanced player. It'll put him, I don't know how many months down the road compared to other kids coming in. But wouldn't you say, Ty, it's pretty fair to say, based on what you heard there, he's further down the road than the average incoming freshman.
100%.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you go to a place like that and not play. Nothing against the high schools in Arkansas, but that's if you have that special talent and you have the ability to get there, that's and the willingness. You know, you think about this, the willingness to pull up your tent stakes and move to another state for the end of your high school career, leave behind all the people you went to school with for, in some cases, 10 or 11 years. That takes courage, too, to get out of your lane, to get out of your comfort zone, and to move to another state. It takes a commitment from your family to put him in that position as well.
And he's been characterized as a really unselfish basketball player, which is important because he could have picked up some bad tendencies while playing in school. I mean, you think about the guys he's surrounded with. Kate Cunningham's going to Oklahoma State. It's one of the guys he played with at Montverde Academy. Zeb Jackson's signed with Michigan. He played with so many talented players down there in Florida. And unfortunately, some of these players are ball hogs and they don't play to the strength of the team, but Moses and some of his teammates really, really didn't do that. And Moses, and that's a good characteristic that Moses Moody has, is as talented as he is, he was willing to share the basketball. And if he's willing to do that in high school, you'd think he's probably willing to do that in college as well.
Yeah. So I'm impressed with everything I've heard. I think a lot of us, we've watched highlights, we've watched things on YouTube or wherever. We've probably never heard Moses Moody speak a lot and really lay it out who he is, what he's about. So I thought that was really good. I think a lot of the fan base is and should be impressed with one of their best incoming players.
And he is your best player in this upcoming recruiting class. Now, I don't know if you want to compare that to Vance Jackson and Jalen Tate. Those will be guys that obviously are grad transfers and they have a little more experience when it comes to public speaking. But if you listen to Moses' conversation with Mrs. Danielle and Eric, you can tell he's more polished than Jalen. He's more polished than Devontae, and he's more polished than KK. Not to say that they're not great in speaking to the media, but Moses just seems like he's far ahead when it comes to just having conversations with the media. Maybe he just felt a little more comfortable talking with Danielle, talking with Eric, but it was really insightful, as Tommy was referring to listen to him, and I thought he made some really good points.
This just came to me while you're talking. You know, all these interviews are happening how right now, Ty? In front of a computer with a camera built into the computer screen, much like where you're sitting. It's very comfortable for these kids also when there's not a camera crew, there's not a light crew, you know, there's not, you know, a sound crew, and all these people that generally when you're given these kind of interviews, at least at a minimum, your local TV affiliate with a camera on their shoulder holding a microphone out. Mm-hmm. So it puts them in their comfort zone too, I think, a little bit with the way we're seeing a lot of things conducted right now. And I wonder how much of that's going to continue because we're willing as consumers to accept it. But these kids are in their comfort zone doing things the way they're doing it right now because that's how they video chat with their friends now anyway.
Mm-hmm. And we mentioned that Moses Moody is going to move on to the next level, and his NBA experience that he wants to get, one of the ways that you do that is you play for a coach with NBA experience. And Eric Musselman has that, and that is one of the big reasons why he signed with Arkansas.
It definitely had a big factor, and just because I found out about that before I actually got to know Coach, so that was more of his reputation. So that was a big thing, attractive thing that I liked even before I met him, and found other things that I liked about him. Just having that NBA experience, because you know that's the ultimate goal. That's where I want to be. So someone that's been to the mountaintop and able to come back and share knowledge. He has relationships. If you're gonna learn from anybody, you might as well learn from the best.
So his reputation preceded the actual meet and greet. So Moses Moody just mentioned that he heard more about Eric Musselman's NBA experience prior to actually having a conversation, actually doing any recruiting conversation with Mutz, which I think is important because I'm assuming Devontae, Jalen, Moses, and KK all have NBA aspirations. So why would you not want to play for a coach who's been at that level, as Moses just mentioned?
Is it fair to say there's just a handful of coaches Arkansas could have hired that would have got Moses Moody to come back to Arkansas to play college basketball? And Musselman's in that small handful?
I don't know. I mean, let's think about some of the guys that were listed or interviewed at the time. Fran McCaffrey was one at Iowa. Steve Forbes was one at East Tennessee State. Greg Marshall at Wichita State. He's had a plethora of problems with keeping players because of his ego. Who are some others that were interviewed at the time?
I think that those were the ones that that were most talked about, or at least when we were following the Jets around, trying to figure out where Hunter Yurecek was landing. Those were the cities.
Kelvin Sampson was the big one,
but you wonder if that was ever going to happen because he was the obvious thing with the connection to Houston with Hunter Yurecek. My point is, though, without a change in the basketball program, without Hunter Yurecek having the courage to make a decision to go in another direction, Moses Moody's not a Razorback. I think that's pretty clear and evident.
We mentioned that on Halftime quite a bit. Talked to Aaron Torres, and like, the brand of Arkansas has always been good, but it just seems like since Musselman's been here, and now you add in specifically the high school kids coming in, but the graduate transfers too, the brand is changing right before our eyes.
What's interesting about that brand is not only is the brand getting exposure when you actually get a commitment and a signing from Jalen Tate and Vance Jackson, but even if your name's in the mix for certain elite grad transfer players or certain elite players, that's a big deal because it doesn't just because you don't land the big fish doesn't mean you make it, doesn't mean you can't be exposed to other big fish, which is important.
This is the best player Arkansas's gotten in recruiting since Bobby Portis. So where's Bobby Portis playing right now? He's playing in the NBA. So what you need, and in some cases you can make the argument, as much as all of us would love for Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe to return for another season at Arkansas, guys, could you also make the case that one of the other great things that could happen for Musselman is both of those guys go get drafted, get a good start to their NBA career, because that's going to help recruiting in a way that I don't think can be helped until there's evidence of an Arkansas player out of the Musselman system, even if it's only a year, going in and having NBA and professional basketball success. You've got to have some evidence of it at some point to really pay off for everything we believe is going to happen at some point in the future. I want to see Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe come back because I think next year could be really special with them and a lot of hard decisions for Musselman on managing that roster. But that's what he's got to also have is players that leave here and get drafted.
Jordan Greenwood texted in asking about Mason Jones' decision. Still no word on that. There was some buzz around social media that he would make an announcement this weekend. It didn't happen. I'm under the impression that he's going to announce that he signed with an agent and he's going to be out the door. That doesn't mean that's necessarily true. That's just my opinion. And with, as you mentioned, the success of what could happen with Isaiah Joe and Mason Jones, that's very important because if you think about what the NBA does for college programs, how John Calipari in Kentucky can point to so many different players at that next level. It's like, hey, we can do this for you. Look at John Wall. Look at DeMarcus Cousins. Look at newly added De'Aaron Fox. I mean, there are so many examples that Cal can point to and say, this is what we can do for you if you come play at Kentucky. What you're hoping, as Tommy mentioned, is that with Isaiah Joe and Mason Jones, both, they have success at the next level. So Eric Musselman can say, hey, this is what I was able to do for them. This is what I were able to do for Cody and Caleb Martin. This is what I can do for you. And those examples just keep multiplying and keep getting bigger and bigger as you progress with the Eric Musselman years down the road.
It's kind of like Sam Pittman in football right now. He can point to, you know, a long period of time, more than a decade period of time, where all of the offensive linemen that started for him, that at least has earned a starting role, have went on to get a shot in the NFL. Now, that's all great, and that's a great resume to recruit to initially at Arkansas. What's got to happen next? Linemen come into Arkansas and then move on and at least get a shot in the NFL, the ones that start. So it's the same thing here. You know, same thing with basketball, football. You've got to coach with some background, some success, some resume to point to in that area, but it's got to happen here too. And that's what I think is on the horizon with Musselman. I know this, you're talking about Mason Jones and no announcement and whether or not he's coming back or going. We're leaning towards he's leaving. With Moses Moody and, you know, assuming today KK comes through and everything else that's happened over the last week or since the 15th, are you a little more comfortable now with All right, Mason Jones goes ahead and hires an agent, enters the draft. That's not good. The team's not getting better as a result of it, but I know my anxiety about it, my comfort level is in a better place knowing these players are coming.
Well, define comfort level. When you say you're comfortable with where the basketball program is, are you comfortable that they're going to make the Sweet 16 and the NCAA tournament? No,
that it's going to be okay. It's not going to be a disaster, you know, because what would be worse? Mason Jones leaving and then, you know, we were thinking Friday, Moses Moody hadn't signed yet. What's up with this? Maybe he's looking at one of these G League things. You know, that's a possibility. Turns out he's just reading the NLI just a little bit closer. You know, if you were scrambling to get a few more players that weren't of that talent level, I think, you know, is it a setback for the team? Sure. But I don't think there's I don't even think with Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe coming back, you can say, well, it's a guaranteed Sweet 16 team.
I think that would be the expectation if they both came back.
Expectation, yes, but not a guarantee.
I mean, there's not guaranteeing anything, but I think the pressure of the fans, and I think there's pressure for them to make the NCAA tournament next year. I think there's a lot of fans that would be,
with or without those guys,
disappointed if this team didn't make the NCAA tournament next year.
Well, is this a more talented roster for next year as we know it now versus what we've had this past season?
You assume so.
I think so.
You can never guess if high school players 100% will be fine at the next level, but that's the assumption from the Arkansas fan base and the majority. If you ask the majority of Arkansas sports media, the expectation set for the Arkansas basketball program next year would be that they make the NCAA tournament. Yeah. Now, how far you stretch into the NCAA tournament, that's a question for another day, but I think right now, as it stands on April 20th, 4/20, it's the expectation is the NCAA tournament.
Well, I just think having Vanover gives you a better shot at making the tournament.
See, you keep talking about Vanover,
You had no height,
listen,
no size,
listen,
no rebounding,
listen.
No rebounding advantage at all.
We need to pump the brakes on Connor Vanover. You, a lot of other people, y'all are expecting him to come in and put up 15 and 10. That's not what he's going to provide.
Not 15, but he can get you closer to 10 on the rebounds.
He's not going to be close to 10 on rebounds this year. He's going to be close to 5 or 6. He is a 7'3" guy.
My God, I'll take it, because you didn't have anybody right now that could, particularly in the offensive glass, give you a chance.
I'm not saying that, but I am saying that people just need to chill out when it comes to the conversation talking about how much of an impact he's going to have next year, because there's a reason he ended up in Cal, which is not a premier basketball school.
Not a premier basketball league.
I like Connor. I've had a conversation with him once or twice. He used to play with him at the Little Rock Athletic Club back in the day. But this idea that he's just going to be a make it or break it type player is a false narrative that we need to stop in the tracks right now.
And no one's saying that, Ty. We're just talking about adding a dimension to this team and this roster that was vastly missed this year. And that was some real height down low. He's not a true five by his body type, but he has true five height and arms and can clean glass better than anybody else you had this year, you're assuming, with a guy at 7'3". So, no one's saying he's going to lead you to a national championship or a Final Four or an SEC regular season title. I'm just saying you didn't have anyone. They had to play somewhat left-handed this year because of the lack of size at all. You know, when you're going 6'9" as your tallest guy up against guys that are 6'11", night in, night out, it's just a problem.
Yeah, it is a problem.
And that's why Arkansas would look like world beaters one night and look like they hadn't tripped getting off the bus the next night because of the matchups. And this just gives you a way to match up with teams that you couldn't last year.
And if you look at the potential projected starting lineup, and this is who I think, if the roster stays intact as it is, I think this is how it could lay it out. Now, I don't know. I think Connor's probably got a leg up on Jalen and everyone else, big men-wise, in terms of who's going to start at center. And I know that he's not a traditional center, a traditional five-man, but if you look at him at five, he's 7'3". Vance Jackson playing the four, he's 6'9". You can say Moses Moody and Isaiah Joe, they're both there. They're about 6'5", 6'6". I think Mo is more 6'6" than 6'5". Isaiah's more 6'5". And then Jalen Tate is 6'6". So your smallest guy, potentially, if the roster stays intact as it is now, is 6'5". I need to stress that your smallest guy could be, and that's projected starting lineup that I'm just throwing out on a whim, could be 6'5", and you have a 7'3" guy. So that's going to be awesome for rebounding purposes. Now, you're not going to be as quick to the ball. One of the important things about this past basketball team is their quickness, their ability to play three-point defense, number one in the NCAA when it comes to that category, but you're going to make up for it in other areas.
Yeah, when Musselman walked on the show last week, when he called us up, That was one of the things he mentioned in that 10 minutes or so he spent with us, was you don't want to give up too much being a great perimeter defensive team. And the more you add some of the size and maybe give up a little bit of the speed, you give up something on the perimeter. And that's where Arkansas has been really good and what, number one in the country defending the three this year. I don't think he's ready and willing to back off that quite yet.
And when it comes to being an elite SEC basketball team, there's a lot of Arkansas fans that want to get back to the Kentucky days where you were 1-2 on the pecking order in that position. Well, Moses Moody wants the same thing.
I feel like we should be and we will be the best team in the SEC. Therefore, I feel like other teams should be looking forward to playing us. We're going to be the champs and everybody else going to be the competitors.
Great answer.
That's the question. That was the answer in question to what Mrs. Danielle asked him. Hey, which SEC team are you most looking forward to? Now, you heard from Vance Jackson. He said all of them, and then he added Kentucky. Devontae Davis mentioned Auburn because of Chris Moore. I think that was he didn't get to play Chris in the state championships, which would have been Jacksonville, West Memphis. So I know him and the other Arkansas players are really excited to play an in-state kid in Chris Moore. And then you just heard from Moses that he wants to play not the hunter, but they want to be the hunted when it comes to this next season. They want to be the elite basketball program in the SEC. Will they be? I don't know 100%. A lot of that's going to be contingent on if Isaiah Joe comes back. Regardless, though, you got to be excited about the future of this basketball program.
And you're wondering, when can you get these guys on campus? We've been, you know, kind of focusing on that from a football perspective. When will the dorms reopen? When will facilities reopen? And I know Sam Pittman was talking about maybe, end of June, getting dorms back open, maybe getting some guys on campus. We think about it from a football perspective because that's what's kind of right on the plate in front of us, but guys, you really wonder, when can Eric Musselman get these guys in the gym and start working out and doing the things that are permissible in the off season for them, because they're missing a lot of the work right now too. We think about it from football because we're ready to go, and spring practice got nixed this year. You know, these basketball guys are generally getting in here early summer too. Hopefully that still works out in a reasonable timeline.
Got the NFL draft this week. We're going to talk to Clay Henry about some Arkansas players at the next level. Also, we're going to have the conversation about Kendall Briles, Barry Odom. They talked with the media via teleconference on Friday. We'll get some sound from them coming up as well as we talk some football. One of the other things you mentioned, just not being able to practice and stuff, and it's not only affecting football, but it's going to affect basketball if this timeline drags on, the communication factor, whether it's Muss, whether it's coaches talking to these kids. Well, they also need to be in communication with each other. Moses touched on that as well.
Been able to talk to Khalil Garland. That's my guy. I've been playing with him for the longest. And then, you know, the incoming freshmen, we all have a group chat, so we've been talking in there. So I've been able to build a relationship. And then I've talked to a couple guys that's been there. You know, Desi and Isaiah, they both play with my brother coming up with the Arkansas Hawks. They play together, so I've already had a relationship with them.
So Moses is having a conversation with guys. I saw several Arkansas players comment when he was having the conversation with Eric Musselman and Mrs. Danielle about Arkansas basketball. So it's going to be really fun to see if these guys can play together. And one of the good things is Moses and KK grew up playing together. Jalen and Devontae played on the same AAU team, the Woods Elite. So you have some connections there. It's not just, hey, we're getting together for the first time and playing with each other. There's some connections in the past that are going to be good for the future of this basketball team.
Should be fun to watch this all develop and start coming together here over the next year or so.
Go, Joe. We love you. Taco. Yeah, baby.
Joe Klein
just took a bite out of the taco. That's what he's doing.
Bird got the shot over the top of Ellison, and Joe Klein just came storming in.
Holy cow, this guy really is something else.
Our next guest is a McDonald's All-American. He fouled out Akeem Olajuwon in college, and he played alongside and against Michael Jeffrey Jordan. Let's welcome in former Razorback Joe Klein into the program. Joe, appreciate the time. I got to ask, when you guys were playing on that 1984 U.S. Olympic team, how many times did you bring up to Michael what happened in Pine Bluff earlier that year?
I never brought it up, but he'd bring it up a couple times, and I'd just look at him and smile.
Oh, man.
I knew how he was. I mean, he was, you know, as you can see from the show last night, I mean, he was the ultimate competitor. And I knew that it just ate at his crawl that, you know, every time he looked at me and Alvin, he knew we, you know, less than a year before that, that we beat him. And so, you know, he just kind of said, you know, something like, yeah, that was a great day, wasn't it? Or, you know, man, that, sorry that you feel that way, or, you know.
And Joe, you
didn't have to say anything because I knew it bugged the hell out of me.
Joe, what's cool about that team is you guys also, not only did you get to play along some great players like Patrick Ewing, Michael Jordan, and others, you guys got to play against the 84 All-Stars. What was it like to play a team that was comprised of the best basketball players in the world at the time early on in your, what led to be your NBA career?
Well, I mean, you know, for a lot of us, it was kind of just, you know, you're kind of all of a sudden, you know, you watched Larry Bird and you watched all these Magic Johnson and Isaiah Thomas and all these guys. And, you know, that's when the NBA was starting to get some, you know, a lot of more TV play because of Larry and Magic. And, you know, we had a distinct advantage in that, you know, they were flying in the day of the game and they were given a uniform and they were just going out there kind of playing pickup. And, you know, we had been together for months. And we had a good stack of guys and we were very excited and motivated to play them. And, you know, I'm not as sure as they were. I mean, they were glad to be there, but I don't think, you know, after an 82 game season, some of them, like Larry and them, just got done playing in playoffs in June. I don't know how fired up they were to be, you know, playing against us. So we had a distinct advantage for sure.
Joe, as you watched the part one of The Last Dance last night, you had a front row seat for a lot of this. Your thoughts and how accurate is this first two installments of what the world saw last night about the Chicago Bulls and the making of all those championships?
I mean, it is spot on. I mean, it is. I mean, I was sitting there and I was like, oh man, I forgot that. And I remembered Scottie being hurt. I didn't remember it being as severe and as long, but then as the documentary was going on, I was like, yeah, he was out for a while. Yeah, we started off 4-4 and we were 0-4 on the road and had to fight for our lives to beat a bad Clipper team on the road. And I was looking at some of the scores they were showing of the games and how we were struggling to score without Scottie. It was spot on. I mean, I think it was, I didn't see anything in there that was, you know, it was even educational for me, and I was there. And so, I mean, I thought it was fantastic.
Former Razorback, former Chicago Bull, Joe Klein with us here on The Morning Rush. Was it really as tenuous and as tenuous as it was documented last night between the general manager, Jerry Krause, and the star players, Michael Jordan and Pippen and Phil Jackson on that team, primarily Phil Jackson?
I think that's the thing they got the most correct, or, you know, they hit it the best, is because I was kind of wondering how they were going to do that. And, I mean, it was every bit of that. I mean, it was every bit of that. I mean, it was, and again, a guy coming in from the outside in, you know, I thought I was going to Shangri-La, you know, I mean, 5 championships in 7 years, going for 6, and, you know, you'd hear a little bit of rumblings from the outside being on other teams because of contract squabbles and things like that, but you didn't know how deep it ran and how contentious it was and how personal a lot of these things were between, you know, basically, you know, the three, you know, the three guys, Phil, Michael, and Scottie, and management, you know, Jerry Krause and Jerry Reinsdorf. I mean, you didn't know that until you got in it. And, I mean, they really did it. I think that's the best thing they did last night, was show the divide.
Joe, this is Clay Henry. I've spent the last couple of weeks talking to a lot of former players and coaches, Pat Foster, James Dickey, Ron Brewer, Jimmy Counts, who's player and a coach, about Coach Sutton going into the Hall of Fame. And they talked about what they learned as far as man defense and the positioning by the inch and how to set screens, angles of screens, and no, just his, your thoughts, Joe, on how you learned defense from Coach Sutton and how that carried you forward in your career.
Well, you know, Clay, I came from when I came from Notre Dame, it was just the opposite. I mean, I grew up in high school. I was taught man-to-man defense, and it was a big deal for us. Then I went to Notre Dame, and, you know, Digger kind of fashioned himself as a football coach. I mean, we weren't in a conference, and so he could kind of make his schedule the way he wanted to make it. And, you know, we would play a really big game or a semi-big game once a week. We might play Maryland on Saturday, DePaul the following Saturday. And so all week long, it kind of was like being a football mentality. We would, you know, we would change our defense. You know, we would be gearing, making a game plan for that particular game week to week and tweaking things and doing things and not overhauling it, but it was never the same. Well, you got there with Coach Sutton, and I mean, it was, you know, he taught you five or six things about positioning, getting towards the ball, you know, how to fight through screens, get through screens, just, you know, but it was drilled in you over and over and over and over again. And it wasn't anything earth shattering. It wasn't anything complicated, but it was taught, like, as you were saying, to the detail, and it was reinforced every day. So you had five or six things that, you know, he was looking for defensively every day, and he would reinforce those to you if you weren't doing them right, and that made it easier, over time to become a really good defensive team, because you weren't trying to trick anybody, you weren't trying to do anything that nobody's ever seen before. You were just trying to do what you could do and do it better than anybody else. And I think that was the beauty of Coach Sutton. I think it was the same way offensively. Our inbounds plays, our sideline out-of-bounds plays. Everybody knew what we were going to do. I mean, you guys were sitting over there going, oh, Scott Hastings is taking the ball out. Okay, he's going to throw it, and then he's going to get a pick, and he's going to come out the other side, and they're going to reverse the ball, and he's going to get a wide-open 18-footer. And they knew it, too. And we would run the play, and Scott would get a wide-open shot on the other side. And it was
What also knew is if you got to the other side and it wasn't open, you would reverse it, and it would be open. Just going to keep reversing it, keep pitching it, keep pitching it, and then eventually the other team would get tired. Yeah. So I'm going to fast forward you to, you know, 30 years later. I'm not trying to make you sound old. I'm old.
Well, I am.
Yeah, I'm sure the knees, they creak, right, Joe? They creak?
They'll wake you up. If I get up in the middle of the night, I wake up the house. The dog barks at me.
Yeah. So Eric Musselman, in his defensive philosophies, do you see a little Coach Sutton out there?
Absolutely. I mean, but you can see that, you know, and I've been lucky enough to sit in on a couple practices. And, again, he's not trying to trick anybody. You know, he's looking at his team, and I think, you know, and watching him and seeing how he had to deal with injuries and do some things this year, you know, he was always doing what was best for the group of guys he had. So, I mean, he wasn't, later on in the year, all of a sudden when Isaiah Joe was out a couple of times, all of a sudden you saw him just double teaming the ball when a guy crossed half court. You know, and I mean, he didn't see that earlier in the year, but he's like, hey, we got to do this to help our offense or, you know, disrupt them, maybe get some points off of defense because they were struggling to score without Isaiah Joe. And it wasn't anything, you know, earth shattering. You know, it wasn't tricking anybody. It was like, you know, go double team the ball, rotate to the open man, you know, get your hands up, talk. And it was very, very simple, but you could see they were very well drilled in doing the simple things defensively. And, you know, that's what Coach Sutton wants.
Speaking with former Arkansas Razorback Joe Klein here on the Morning Rush. Joe, you mentioned Coach Digger Phelps being at Notre Dame the year you spent over there. after you decided to transfer to Arkansas, would you say that's probably the best basketball decision that you've ever made?
Without a doubt. I mean, and it was the hardest. I mean, because I still love Notre Dame. I grew up Catholic. I still am Catholic. My mother and father, I mean, we prayed the rosary. We did all the, you know, still do to this day. So, I mean, it was a very, I remember making that decision and how I think for the first time in my life, you know, I really felt stress. You know, I never, you know, you're a young kid. You don't know what stress is. You don't, you know, feel your stomach churning over stress. You felt it churning over excitement of playing a game or things like that. But you didn't feel that worry and that cloud over your head or that weight. And it was a very, very, very hard decision to make because of my roots and because I loved Notre Dame. I still love Notre Dame. But it wasn't working with Coach Phelps. Coach Phelps is a good guy. He was a good family man. I haven't kept up with him, so I don't know what's going on in his life. But it wasn't anything personal with him. It wasn't working. I didn't like how I was being coached. I didn't feel a connection with my coach. And when I came to Arkansas, I mean, that was the kind of environment I needed to be in. I think that I fit the school better, being from a small country town in Slater. I mean, Coach Sutton was a coach like my high school coach, and he was very direct and to the point. And that's the kind of house I was raised in, as my father was an ex-World War II Marine. So, I mean, I just think it was a... And I was very close to coming to Arkansas out of high school. I mean, it was a lot closer than people thought. But in the end, my faith kind of pushed me over the edge. And I, Sean, when he got into the Hall of Fame the other day, he called me, and Sean and I were talking, and his dad was there, and he's like, you know, yeah, if you'd have come to Arkansas out of high school, we would have won a national championship. And I'm just like, yeah. And he goes, and if you were to come out of high school, and my dad would have got in the Hall of Fame 10 years earlier, and they were kind of giving me the business. And I said, well, I made a choice. I chose God over Coach Sutton, and I was wrong. I'm sorry.
That's good.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's rich.
I haven't heard, Joe, I don't think I've heard that story before, so that's that's pretty good. I was reading, Joe, I was reading a piece in The Athletic talking about Larry Bird the other day, and you actually gave some stories to Larry Bird. And when it comes to playing with Michael Jordan, when it comes to playing with Larry Bird, when it comes to some of the great players that you've ever played with, who is the best trash talker?
Oh, Larry. Michael was good, you know, but Larry did it so subtle. And Larry had a wit about him that was just, you know, it's just like the other day. I mean, somebody sent me a picture, a quarantine picture of a grave being dug in their backyard. And they said, my wife's taking up gardening, you know? And so I sent it to Larry. And within 30 seconds, I said, I saw my wife Dana digging this in the backyard, and within 30 seconds, he texts me back going, can I help? So, I mean, his wit was just, you know, it was just great. He has a great dry sense of humor, and I just, you know, his trash talking was quiet. He would do it leaning down against you on the free throw line. He would, you know, walk by the bench, you know. In practice, it was 10 times worse in practice because it was more private and everything was more personal, but it was all good. And I mean, it was funny, but Michael was good too. But you know, Larry's had a little more fun in it. Sometimes Michael's was a little more right to the heart, you know? So, I mean, I enjoyed Larry's better.
Joe Klein with us here on the Morning Rush. Help fill in the cracks. I've heard part of this story, but you were at the center of it in one of Coach Sutton's practices where he decided to line everybody up and practice taking charges that day or delivering charges. And he wasn't quite happy with the way you had taken a charge in a game, so thought y'all needed a little practice on that.
Well, no, I just got back from the Olympics, and, you know, and I was, walking around campus, and you know, nothing stank, and I was the man. And you know, I think we were in practice, and you know, guys coming down the lane, and I bailed out. You know, I didn't step in and take it. And again, as we talked earlier, they were five or six things defensively for Coach Sutton that you were going to do. you're not bailing out on a charge. And so, you know, he lined everybody up on the left, and I had to slide across the lane to the block and take a hit. And then he lined them all the way up on the right. I had to slide across to the right and take a hit from everybody on both sides of the floor. And then he just kind of looked over at me and he goes, I just wanted to make sure that you know that gold medal doesn't keep you from taking a hit in the chest and falling down and taking a charge. And I was like, no, sir. And so from then on, if I was walking through the BA and somebody bumped into me, I was going down. I was laying out, man. It didn't take anything. I was going down.
So, Joe, tell us what Coach Sutton going into the Hall of Fame means to the ex-players. And I kind of know, but I just want to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, man, it's family. You know, he's a second dad to all of us. You know, a lot of, you know, some of us even more so. He is, you know, everything that I have, you know, along with my family, I look to Coach Sutton. His leadership and making me a man and talking to me and never demeaning us and the family atmosphere he built at Fayetteville, I thought was, you know, it's what all great programs and great coaches do. They create a atmosphere to where, you know, I feel like I never played with Ron Brewer, but when I see him, I feel like he's my brother. You know, same with Sidney, Marvin, you know, and I know Nolan's guys feel the same way about, you know, Nolan, and that, you know, they didn't necessarily play together, but because of the culture and the things that these great coaches created, that, you know, they create a family. And that's where your programs grow, and that's how your programs become great programs, because you have great men leading them and players following and believing and willing to do anything they can for the family. And, you know, that was Coach Sutton.
Speaking with Joe Klein here on the Morning Rush, former Arkansas Razorback. Joe, as we close you down here watching this last night, and you talked about remembering, and I saw that you put out your last dance hat on social media earlier this week. How significant is it for you to be on that last championship team?
I was very fortunate. You know, God was looking out for me. You know, I was into my 13th year. I wasn't very good anymore. I mean, I didn't have a lot of juice left in the tank. I was, you know, again, going into my 13th year in the league. And I was a role player, and I got the opportunity to be a part of a dynasty, a very small part, but I got to witness it and be a part of it. And, you know, just watching that, you know, last night, and just all the friends and the people on Twitter and people texting me during the show, and then, you know, my big old head gets in there for a little cameo there for a second. And you know, everybody starts texting me going, I see you and look at you. And again, I feel very, very lucky. You know, and I feel that way about my whole career. I mean, you know, you look at where I came from, Slater, Missouri, just, you know, and then what I got to do, it's just, you know, it's a ride I could have never imagined. And then to get to be, again, a very small part of that ride, that last dance ride with that, you know, with that crew of players. I mean, just I just sit back and go, man, how lucky am I?
Big Joe from Slater Mo, Joe Klein, former Arkansas Razorback, longtime NBA basketball player. Joe, thank you so much for talking to us this morning. I really appreciate you making some time for us.
Oh, you're welcome, guys. Have a great day.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy
Here he is. The Clay Henry.
What's going on, man?
Chilling. I'm excited to. I've been listening to the last 45 minutes of you guys. I didn't make the start of the show, but the last 45 minutes I listened to you guys, and y'all caught me up on the Moses Moody saga. And I'll remind you that I told y'all had all these conspiracy theories that he was going to the G League Friday. I said, hey guys, he's going to sign with Arkansas. You can find that tape and play it if you want to. But I tried to calm y'all down last Friday.
We weren't over the edge on that. We were just wondering if that was a possibility.
Ty was. And I'm like, well, I think he's going to Arkansas.
I don't have the ability to just play my tape because Tommy did this last week. He said I said something that I didn't say, and now the speculation is that I said something that I didn't say, and that's just like the Moses Moody conversation. I wasn't the one that was on. That was Tommy that was more speculating than anything.
I'm just saying that possibility, I think, was unbeknownst to a lot of the audience that a high school player, if offered by the NBA to go to the G League, could sign for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
And I said he was going to go to Arkansas.
And you were right.
You called your shot, Clay. So. You called your shot. So let's talk about Barry Odom and
Oh, I'm just messing with y'all. But you know what? All that we went through for 2 weeks waiting because they didn't pick a signing date caused all that consternation because and what they did, and I think I give you credit for this, Ty, because you said this early on. I think they're all picking different dates to all have their splash, right? Mm-hmm. In other words, it happened one by one. It was orchestrated by the players because they're so close. And that they, instead of all signing on signing day, and then you have one story with all of it, you had a lot more splash in the newspapers and on our radio show and just scattered around. And that's the way it is now. It's not like National Signing Day for football where there's pressure for them all to sign on that same day. Now we're ready to move on to football, right?
Perfect. So one of the things, there's a couple of things that stood out to me from the teleconference on Friday, Clay. But first I want to play this clip from Kendall Briles on Rakeem Boyd. I don't know. You could probably give more insight to this. I'm under the impression that Kendall had a lot to do with Rakeem coming back. Now he said, I'm not the reason he came back, Rakeem. He pointed out other reasons. But if you look and what Kendall Briles has done with running backs over the years, the list of studs that he's had, the list of guys that have had really good statistics, it's pretty plentiful. So here is what Kendall Briles had to say about Rakeem Boyd, the Arkansas leading returning rusher.
A very talented back. The thing about him is he's a really powerful runner, but he's got good elusiveness as well. And then he's got good ball skills. He's got the drive. He's got the 1-2. He's a big kid. He's, 205 pounds. He's broad shoulders. And he's got long speed. He can run. I think he's an all-around, every-down back. Really excited to get on the field with him.
Clay, we're going to get a chance to talk with Seth Russell, former Baylor quarterback, later this week on Wednesday, and I want to get some takes from him, what it's like to play under Kendall Briles, and he has that ability to share that because he played quarterback under Kendall Briles' system, and now as he talks about Rakeem Boyd and what he thinks he could do under Arkansas, I think Arkansas fans have to be really excited about what Rakeem could do in Briles' offensive system.
Yeah, and I think what you're going to see is that system is going to get better because in talking with Sam Pittman and Brad Davis, they've melded or put together, meshed some new blocking aspects to that scheme. In other words, they're going to have inside zone, outside zone, the power, the counter. And I think that was what Sam really did well at Georgia. So I think it's a perfect marriage in that this system is going to give you, some inside blocking encounters where you see, two guys pull. If you remember the old, power tray that the Washington Redskins ran, I think that's coming. And I think there'll be some situations where you really see, you know, some aspects of the running game that maybe we haven't seen the last few years that make a big difference. Now, everybody wants to see the ball in the air, and they've got those wide receivers like Knox and Burks, but don't sleep on Traylon Smith, who's the Arizona transfer that really has a lot of talent and is a really proven blocker. You know, that's what they marveled last fall during the couple of scrimmages where they put him out there. He was ineligible because he transferred. But his blocking ability and want to block makes the chances of having two great backs in the backfield at the same time, where you start them out together and maybe you move one in the slot and then you run to his side because he can block a safety. So it's exciting, and I think that without question the Kendall Briles offense is starting to take shape, and we're starting to see that. I'll be interested to hear that interview that you've got set up, Ty, and congratulations. You're rolling them out, and I just it makes me excited to get up because I know that each day you're going to have something new and something special.
We're going to have B.J. Young later this week. Dusty Hannis is going to join us tomorrow at 8 a.m. And then, like you talked about, Seth Russell, former Baylor quarterback, is going to join us at 8 on Wednesday.
All right, so, Clay, you're talking about the blocking schemes up front. Obviously, Sam Pittman was here as an O-line coach for Brett Bielema back in, 13, 14, 15. So compare and contrast what kind of blocking we're going to see this year at Arkansas versus maybe some of the things we did or didn't see when Sam was here before, when he had, I guess that'd be Alex Collins running the football primarily back then. Kind of compare what we saw then and Arkansas trying to run the football the way Bielema wanted to, and then what we're going to see with Briles and Pittman's offense.
Yeah, well, the key is that your offensive coordinator, your play caller, your quarterback coach, and your offensive line coach have that mesh. I think what I remember with Sam is that he was a man guy, and that when Dan Enos replaced Jim Chaney, which that didn't go over well. Do y'all remember the Toledo game?
Yeah.
And Toledo was able to get vertical against their zone blocking scheme. They had went to a zone as opposed to the man. And I didn't think that went, but that's the scheme that he perfected at Georgia. And I think that's what they're running now. So he's a big believer in that zone scheme and how you can run the outside in the inside zones. And I think everything is going to be fun. I really do.
Clay, Brandon has a question for you concerning Kendall Briles' offense. What kind of offense is it? Is it a pass first spread or run first spread like Miles on? And how much emphasis will be on the running game?
Well, I don't think he's tried not to put a name on it, and I think what you're able to do a lot of times depends on what the front that the defense gives you. If people back off, well, he wants to run it. Well, what they haven't been able to do is get people to back off because the passing game hasn't been crisp, in the blocking area. So that's what has to improve. But I think it'll be more of a power running game than what you've seen the last 5 years since Sam Pittman and Jim Chaney have been gone. I think you're going to see more running in comparison, but it'll be spread concept. You'll have one tight end, you'll have three wide receivers most of the time, but they will sprinkle in some four wide receiver sets when they're in third and 10 in that situation.
Would run and shoot, I know pace and space has been the name usage for what Arkansas is trying to do on the basketball court. Is run and shoot the best way because they're really trying to pound it and then they will take a bunch of shots? Would you say that's a good characterization of this offense?
Not sure. If he doesn't want to put a characteristic on it, then I don't either, because I think it'll evolve into what the players can do. If their quarterback can run and shoot, well, then they might play that way. Yeah. But they're going to play what the players allow them to play. And with the young offensive line, lots of passing is kind of a pipe dream. And If you try to throw a lot and you can't protect, your quarterback's going to get mauled. So I think it'll start out with a heavy influence in the running game more than the passing game. But if they show the ability to mesh in the passing game, I'm talking about offensive line, backs, quarterbacks, wide receivers, then you see the passing game escalate. Here's what you have to remember, guys. They got no practice. They got no spring practice. They're virtual practicing right now. There's only one way for an offensive line to evolve. And what is it? It is to practice. It is to work. And they're taking that away from them. And I mean, COVID-19 has, the problems that we've seen with the offensive line and the ability to mesh, the last 2 years, it's been injuries. Well, right now it's not being able to practice with their new coaches.
Clay, what do you think this team will look like when it comes to tempo? We saw Chad Morris try to run an up-tempo offense but never really got there. I don't know what Arkansas's MO is going to be in regards to that, but based on everything you just said about the lack of practice and the lack of ability for an offensive line to gel and everything else to come together, I would imagine particularly early in the season, but maybe even this entire 2020 season, whatever it looks like, this team running any kind of up-tempo, quick-snap offense is going to be a challenge.
Yeah, what I think happens with most teams' tempo regard, where you see tempo is when the chains move. And the way you play tempo is that you don't substitute when you get a first down. If you get a first down, that means a drive has just happened. You've gone from first down, second down to first down, or first down, second down, third down to first down. But if you don't, there is no tempo. You're off the field.
Yeah. The key is to not.
And that's what kept.
Yeah.
Yeah, but.
The key is to not substitute the quarterback for the punter. So.
That's right. Well, or any other position, because once you substitute, the umpire steps in and stands over the football, right, Tommy?
Correct.
And then it comes to a screeching halt because the defense is allowed to substitute. And what happens is the defense is going to substitute, but they substitute slowly. So you've come to a screeching halt. But the first thing that has to happen is you got to get a first down. There's no tempo. In fact, if you'll ask a head coach, if you don't get the first down, you want to go slow because your defense is out there too much. So to play tempo, you have to be successful, yeah, and you have to move the chains. But they definitely want to play up tempo. They want to be more fast paced than what you saw the last 2 years. But to their credit, they're not preaching that. They're not yelling hammer down. They're not yelling get in the left lane. They're going to let it happen when it happens.
Yeah. And to your point, you've got to find 11 guys that can play 7, 8, 9 plays in a row. Even if you don't run tempo, even if you don't snap it quick, what you're talking about is freezing the defense with their inability to substitute by keeping your 11 on the field. That means you got to find 11 guys that can go 10 plays in a row without coming off the field. And that sounds easy sitting here saying it, but that's harder to do in practice.
Yeah, the key for all of this to happen is for the NCAA to say you can now bring them to Fayetteville and at least get out on the field and start seeing who can snap it, who can't. And they got to find 4 or 5 centers. And Ty Clary is the center. There's probably not any doubt about that. He's going to be the center. But they want to see who else can snap it. And they've got to start seeing who can play multiple positions so that they know, well, if this guy goes down, then can we move him? What are the capabilities of Cunningham? Can he play guard and tackle? What are the capabilities of Gallon? Can he play guard and tackle? And then start to figure out who are our big dudes? And they've got to get the freshmen here. And they haven't seen those offensive linemen. And I suspect because they didn't have spring practice, those guys are going to have a great chance to be in the starting lineup or at least be in the two deep, because all these guys that were here this spring for this semester, they didn't get a spring practice. They didn't get the jump on Jalen St. John to, you know, just to throw a name out. You know, it's mind-boggling to me what not having spring practice did to the players that were on campus, their chances to be starters. And it's just, and you just wiped out their advantage with new coaches. And so that it's, I think you're going to see some of those big freshmen. I'm talking about, you know, the offensive linemen that are massive in stature and ability, that they will have a chance to, if they're not starting for the first game, they may be starting by the third or fourth game.
With everything going on right now, Clay, you need someone in charge that is willing to think creatively, is willing to be a great person who divvies out responsibilities. And Barry Odom spoke to how Sam Pittman has been in a leader during this time.
Coach Pittman's done such an amazing job on, really, they don't, you know, they didn't give him a handbook on how to handle this, but he has provided structure, organization, and the things that, you know, he's put in play for us to be able to do. We've gotten a lot better as an organization in the last month, and it's because of his leadership and the things that he's put in place for us to carry out and do. And then our kids, I can't give them enough credit for the way that they've responded and the attentiveness and the, you know, they're hungry to learn. They've got both feet in and what we're doing program-wise, and it's, you know, we've adjusted and handled things. I think, I don't know that it could have, and, you know, who knows how much longer this we've got, but they've done such a tremendous job, and it starts with the leadership of Sam. But then also,
Clay, it's important during this time that head coaches have a good grasp of what everything's going on, and it's difficult for any head coach, regardless if you have 20 years of experience or you don't have a single at the collegiate level. And I know that Sam Pittman is a first-time head coach at the Division I level in the toughest division in college football. His task at hand is tough, but based on what you heard from Barry Odom, he's doing a good job of keeping the team together and keeping them organized as best they can during these times.
Yeah, I mean, the key is for him to keep the staff together, and then the assistant coaches will keep the team together. And it's also spend the right amount of time on recruiting. And it sounds like they've done that as well. In fact, you know, that's the very first thing they do start in the morning, is they write letters and send notes and send texts. And they, you know, and then they finish the day doing that. So, you know, it's a dead period, but they can write a lot of letters and do other things technology wise. But it's a challenge. You know, Sam told me last week that he's tried to reach out and touch base, and so, you know, some of his key people, what are you doing, you know, with the people that they know around the SEC and around the Big 12, and they all have connections. So what are y'all doing to make sure that they're doing the same things other schools are doing? So I don't think there's any secrets out there. I think there's a lot of, you know, we're in this together. How can we do this and be within the rules, the structure that each conference and each, you know, the NCAA has given them? I do know that they're going to get 4 more hours this week as far as virtual coaching, that they're expanding that a little bit this week. And, you know, then the other part that, you know, we're not even talking about that is critical, is that their academic people have to make sure that these guys are doing their own online work. You can't walk through and check attendance anymore. You know, it's like you get a text from a guy, yeah, I did my work today. Well, let's see it. I mean, let's send it to us. So they're, you know, they used to, you know, they had a guy that walked through and checked to see who was in class. And, you know, you just peek in there and your guy's on the front row. All right, go to the next room. They're not on campus. They're not up on the hill in the communications building or, you know, where I would have been in the engineering and architecture building. You know, that's where I would have been. Go back 45 years. Yeah. Well, if there was, the reason I would have been there had been a cute girl, I would have, you know, dropped in there.
Smart.
Wouldn't
kid.
Have been to go to class. Yeah. I wouldn't have been in that class, yeah. But, you know, I was checking out to see who might be in that class. Mm-hmm. Joking. But it's a challenge in all these areas. And, you know, it's, I asked Sam, I said, do you have a handbook? He started laughing because I knew he didn't. You know, you had a handbook that you brought from other stops, you know, like they have a book that tells them what they're going to do the whole day, every day of the whole season. You know, this day we would be doing this, just like the day I talked to him. Well, this would have been practice 10 of spring practice. Yeah. It would have been an evaluation after their second scrimmage.
Yeah,
that didn't happen.
Clay, with the exception of Justin Steph and the wide receivers, where are these guys at just building a personal relationship with their guys, you know, whether it's the D lineman or just by position? Because that's another element of building the trust, of building the team, of building the room for that group that these guys haven't had the time to do. And you don't build relationships over Zoom or Skype. You build them in person. And yeah, they haven't had time to do a lot of this stuff, because if you just think about the calendar of when these coaches arrived, when Sam hired them versus where we're at now, just the rules haven't permitted a whole lot of time to get a lot of this done.
Yeah, the coaches after signing day, and I think they were in there in January at the, you know, they can go to the workouts. They can't. And they can jump in some of the agility drills. And they may not be football related, but they kind of are. You know, they can do drills that look like a play, but they can't have a football out there. So when you say they haven't coached them, that's wrong. And the strength coaches will take the cue from the position coaches to get them lined up and running their stuff. So there's been more. It's amazing to me when you go out there for the first day of spring practice and everybody knows exactly where to go to line up. Have you ever noticed that? That's because they practiced it. Yeah. They just cannot have a football and they can't throw and catch. But the players can throw and catch on their own. And it's amazing how much that looks like football practice too.
Yeah.
You know, past skeleton. How do they know that? Well, they know it because they've been told. So there's more of a relationship than you think, Tommy. It was going to really intensify, you know, in the 3 weeks of spring practice. Unfortunately, that didn't happen.
I'm thinking about the personal relationships too, Clay. You know, knowing someone's family, knowing
you got it.
Brothers
yep.
and sisters, knowing mom and dad, and what makes up their background. Yeah, I mean, one thing to know the right drills to run, but to get these players to trust you, they got to know you care about them. And that's the stuff that takes time and is built over time. And there's no substitute for the time on that.
Yeah, I have a feeling that that's been sped up with the virtual contacts and the FaceTime and in the Zoom, because, you know, it's I think all of these guys are smart enough, Barry Odom, to ask his safety. Says, is mom in the room with you? Yes, she is. Well, sit down, mom. Let's talk a little bit. I think some of that's going on. You know, they're smart cookies. And I the time I've been around all these guys, Brad Davis, Kendall Briles, they're all smart enough to utilize the tools that they have to learn a little bit more about these guys and their parents. It would be common for mom to be in the background anyway, right? It's just like, hey, coach, here I am. That's the good thing about what these men are, and all of them are men. And I use that in, you know, a respectful term, that they understand they're not just the coach. They're also, you know, dad away from home. And in some cases, dad all the time. And I think y'all probably get that. So I think they're utilizing the tools to build on those relationships, and the bond is getting a little bit stronger each day.
Clay, we've heard from Moses Moody, Mason Jones, Vance Jackson, and others what they've been doing during this time where they can't be on campus, they can't be working out in certain gyms and stuff. And this question comes via from Tom in Fort Worth asking about any conversations with the strength coach. What is the football team doing right now in terms of getting ready for the season from a conditioning standpoint?
Yeah, the players are supposed to be running and they're supposed to be lifting weights. And some of those, you know, they've got to be creative in how they do it. And the strength guys are zooming with them and going through drills and double checking to see what they're doing. You know, it comes down to an individual basis. You know, does the guy do what he's supposed to do? And we all know that there'll be a certain percentage that don't. It's just human nature. And you're hoping that, you know, all this stuff that they did in the last 4 months is not wasted when they get back together in late June or early July, whenever that happens. And that there's, you know, I take with a grain of salt that everybody has done what they're supposed to do. I don't think there's any way, you know. And
I'll say they haven't. If you want to they just haven't.
But that's not a problem unique to Arkansas, guys.
No, it's not.
That's going to be a problem at Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Auburn, Alabama, even to a degree. I mean, you just keep going down. This is going to be a problem at every school, what we're talking about here.
Yeah, I mean, they're young men. I mean, you know, some of them turned into slobs in the last 3 weeks. I mean, is that fair to say?
I think that is an image of society of what's going on. Right?
We've turned into slobs.
I think a lot of our diets could use a lot of improvement right now.
I'm scared to death that they're going to come back to school and they look like Ty Richardson. I just ain't.
Whoa.
Barbershop is closed. I mean, they could have a mullet haircut. That's true.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about the way he lives, Yeah. I'm afraid that it's going to. They've just kind of morphed into animal house-like, mm-hmm. like Ty Richardson is. I mean, we've heard how Ty lives. We know it's animal house-like, right? You've already had roommates bounce out on you already, right?
Yeah, Jenkins kicked me out.
Yeah, I see.
John left town.
John left. Yeah, Jenkins John kicked left. Me out.
Yeah. Mm. So I would say there's a track record there.
Fair enough.
Okay.
All right. Fair enough.
I'm joking, in case you didn't know.
Maybe the hair. Maybe you'll see a lot more long hair come when they actually get back on campus, Clay. Maybe that's probably the most truthful.
You kind of got the Brian Boswell going there a little bit.
It's growing. It's not going to get cut for a while.
It's not going to get cut for a while. I say about 3 weeks we'll start to be able to get haircuts again. I just got this feeling. Yep.
All right.
Are you going to get a haircut right when those barbershops open back up, Tommy?
Probably we'll need to by then.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I'm holding out a little bit. We'll see.
It's all right. It's not quite to a tremendous level of what is the right word we're looking for here? We need a glorious mullet. We need something Gundy-esque. Here,
Gundy.
You haven't quite grown the mullet out quite to a Von Erich, Gundy, Boswell. I'm trying to think of all the great Billy Ray Cyrus level yet. That's Billy Ray Cyrus. Is that the king of all mullets?
I would say that's
the king of the mullets.
Oh yeah, that's it. He's pretty much. Yep. You know, Gundy's just a wannabe mullet.
Yeah, he's probably the most popular mullet right now, but probably not the best mullet.
He looks really good. I've been to Oklahoma State. I've been to Stillwater a few times.
Even John Daly has tried a little bit of the mullet.
I like Daly's. Yep. Daly's had a clean look in the 90s. I think that's probably the closest thing I have. My hair used to be bleach blonde like Daly's. It's not so much anymore because I'm not outside as much.
I think that's looking good. You need to go the Joe Dirt mullet.
Joe Dirt? Joe Dirt. All right.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.